Welcome, folks, to the 9th of February, 2022 Aries Working Group call. We're glad you're here. We have a number of important RFCs to review today, as well as some help wanted discussions. So that's good. And hopefully I didn't scare everyone away by saying that. This is a Hyperledger call, so we have an antitrust policy and a Hyperledger code of conduct in action here. This helps us avoid legal issues and it helps us all to feel welcome. If there's any way that we can clarify or help with either of those issues, please reach out to me or probably anyone, and they will help you navigate through that or find the right folks. In the chat, I will paste the link to the agenda where you are free to add yourself to the attendees list if you wish. Helps us keep track of who attends what and for what conversations. And with that, is there anyone new today that has not attended previously or in a while, or would just like to reintroduce themselves?
I probably should do that. My name is Simon. I work at Indicio as a software engineer for enterprise team, and I'm happy to be here today.
Welcome, Simon. All right. Glad that you are all here. Are there any announcements that ought to be on my list that are not? All right. Any release status or work updates that folks want to share?
Yeah, I would like to jump in on Aries Framework JavaScript. Just earlier this morning, we merged the work in order to, from the holder and prover perspectives, do revocation, so able to prove proof of non-revocation. We're working on the Aries agent test harness. There's some potentially failing tests and some of the back channel work that still needs to happen there. But some good progress on that.
Nice. Any other projects people want to share about? All right. So we have a number of things under discussion today. We have three RFCs, PRs to discuss that have various implications. And we will get to those in a minute. The links are in the agenda and I will pull them up on screen as we get there. Before we do that, there are two areas of help wanted that I wanted to highlight. These are relatively small projects in the sense that they are not perpetually ongoing. Well, one of them is, but very light. And these are things that we could help with to sort of run the community. The first item is quarterly reports. We submit as a project, as an Aries project, quarterly reports to Hyperledger. And that kind of helps them understand the progress that we've made, how active the community is, et cetera, to the technical steering committee. Where we've got a schedule, and that's once a quarter, which was just recently. And I believe Stephen Curran jumped in to make this happen. The reports involve sort of chasing down some progress and active projects, reporting on stuff that's happened through the quarter, and it's not a huge lift. And then preparing that report and submitting it to the Hyperledger Technical Steering Committee. And then that way that helps them keep track of everything, including help we might need or stuff that's going on. We have been colossally late, like a lot in the past like year and a half, as there's been pandemicness and job shifting and all stuff going on. And so one of the thoughts that I had was that if someone just finds joy in the creation of quarterly reports, this might be a good opportunity to have someone be able to step up and be the quarterly report maestro that they can, that would be their focus. And they could go ahead and organize that. So not necessarily going to like pause until someone volunteers here for these help wanted lifts. But if you are interested or be willing to help us out with that, please reach out to either Stephen Curran or I, and we can help you sort of get pointed in the right direction. Nothing is on fire because Stephen took care of this last one. But that would be something that you could become familiar with prior to the next one. And there is actually a regular calendar, so you know when they're due. And we've just been really busy and colossally bad at hitting that deadline. And so that would be a relatively small thing that would benefit the community. That is ongoing, but is a relatively light lift. The second thing that I wanted to talk about was the Ares RFC repo. There's a handful of things that have been a little bit broken for a while that if someone wanted to jump in and help us fix, that would be amazing. We have some tests that run. This is not the one that I was looking for necessarily, but we have, let's see. I have to look at one of these. We have some build tests that run as part of a GitHub action on a on setting stuff up. And these haven't been updated in kind of a while. And so there's some adjustments that can be made to this to make this easier and to prevent this from being an issue for folks that are confused about that. Related is the fact that we have a code that updates the index.md file to be able to rebuild this automatically from the RFCs that are present. That code was originally written by Daniel Hardman, and it works, but there's some difficulties getting it to run as a GitHub action, which means that this would get generated automatically. And so this is actually quite old. And it doesn't affect updates necessarily, but particularly when new stuff is added, it isn't here. And so there's some GitHub actions work that could be done that would allow this or would help this to be rebuilt every time we merge a PR, which would be great for keeping that updated. And that's long been something that we wanted to do and just haven't been able to make it happen. There are some little bit of things to navigate, including permissions on who can actually commit to the repo and how to get around those issues. We also last looked at it when GitHub Actions was relatively young, and I know there's been some updates that had to make things like that substantially easier. And so if someone wanted a short-term, not long-term development project, to either work on the integration test that we have or the build script through GitHub Actions, that would be fantastic. So there's a couple of areas that if you wanted to help out in the community, that would be stuff that you can work on and would be much appreciated by all. Does anyone have any questions about those items? Is anyone want to enthusiastically volunteer? And again, I'm not really going to pause till we get a volunteer, but if there is someone that wanted to stick their hand up, then that would be convenient for the rest of us to know that. Okay. If that is something, or you know someone that might be interested, these are items and we can definitely help you get started and orient you to the task if you're interested. And that way we can try and make some progress there. Okay. We have three different RFCs to discuss today, our RFC PRs, which affect things in the community quite substantially. And so we want to bring those up and discuss those in our meeting today. This one, it was opened by Stephen Curran, and it updates the out-of-band transition RFC with a target completion date of phase one. Phase one is being able to recognize out-of-band invitations in addition to connections invitations, but still defaulting to using connections invitations if your product already does so. If it's already using data exchange, then there's no need to change that. Or if it's using, the out-of-band invitations. But this is the targeted completion date for updating all code to be able to recognize this. The phase that happens in step two, which would in theory begin after this date here, is to default to using the new invitations in QR codes instead of the old invitations. If step one is completed properly, that should be a smooth transition in the sense that anyone who is capable of seeing the or of receiving both will be able to handle the new QR codes as they appear. And so this is relatively light in the fact that this is still a date that needs to be discussed in the community, but we are asking that folks take this seriously and integrate it into the development timeline so that your software is ready by this date, and we can move forward as a community to the new style of invitations. This is a community coordinated update that we do in the Aries community. These are infrequent. There's only been one before that was successful. It's a change that we had to make sort of community wide because the existing mechanisms for discovery and auto config are insufficient for this particular problem. Notably with QR codes, you don't know what the other person is going to be able to scan before you generate it. And so we have sort of a bootstrapping issue here, and that's why we're involved in this effort. So with that, is there any feedback or thoughts about the target completion date for step one of RFC 496, the transition to out of band? Any questions?
I know we had, Stephen was reaching out to various people. Is there a place where we've recorded commitments that people have made towards this?
I don't think commitments. We typically record completions in the RFC itself.
Okay.
Hello there,
Mr. Curran. Your ears must have been burning. We were talking about your excellent PR here.
It's a horrible PR. I read it yesterday. It's awful. Mm-hmm. And for that, I apologize.
This PR?
Yeah.
No.
Been thinking about this. Sorry, I had to miss the first of this, but. Let's get it going.
Yes. James is just wondering if we anywhere to record commitments, and I mentioned that we didn't. We typically just record the actual completion.
Commitments by individual. So there's a place at the end of it that people can say they've done it. Sending it to the Aries mailing list would be wonderful. I mean, any possible way we can get it known would be really good.
Yeah, so as you make progress, brag about the fact that you make progress to remind the rest of us that we need to make progress too.
Exactly.
This is the place that you go ahead and amend this with a PR to indicate that your software is compatible in any necessary notes. And so you want to update this as you go. And that way we can know who's actually all the way there, but certainly making noise about it is a useful thing in the community.
Yeah. And my plan today after checking in with folks was to send out an email that I said I would do long ago and haven't, just because it's nagging doubts that I've been wondering about. So I wanted to check with folks today. Then I was going to send it out, including saying, broadcast to the world, you've done it. If you're ready for, and read very carefully. What I'm going to do is sort of try to say very carefully what it means to be in step one. I think many are ready, which is just that you can receive both, but always use connections. But that means that as soon as we go to step two, you are going to start, people will transition over and start using out of band.
Generating out of band messages in the QR code.
Exactly.
Yeah, instead of just reading them.
Yeah, it's all about that initial message and being able to handle whatever comes. But it's the tricky part is that when you initial, you've got to be able to count on what the other party can handle. And right. If they're not at the point they can handle out of band, then you're going to be in trouble on step two. So that's what we want, is everyone at step one is just ready to be able to handle it.
Yes, and specifically, this enables us to sunset the connections protocol for the much both named and corrected DID exchange protocol, which fixes lots of the issues that connections protocol is one of the first we ever designed, and we've got smarter since then. So we're looking forward to be able to sunset the old one and using the new one for all the benefits there.
You bet.
So does anyone have any questions, or is anyone opposed to merging this PR and setting this target date? The goal of this target date being out a little bit is that we understand that companies all have development schedules, and that coming up with something and announcing a target that's like a week in advance is not particularly useful. And so setting this out ideally sooner is better than later. But the idea is that this allows for some adjustment of development schedules to make this happen.
Yeah.
We know sometimes these things are set out, multiple cycles in advance. And so it takes a little bit of advance warning to make it happen.
Yeah, it's 7 weeks out and a Q1 goal. I like it.
Yep.
James?
That was the thinking.
It definitely seems reasonable to me. I wanted to poke Kareem to see if I think you've been a little bit closer to the DID exchange implementation in AFJ and out of band. So I wanted to check with you if you think this is feasible. I think so, but I figured I would ask.
So specifically, this, I know it's named out of band and DID exchange. This is just the out of band transition that we're affecting now. The reason why we don't need to lump DID exchange in with this is that the out of band invitations allow you to specify which protocols you're using, which adds the auto configuration necessary to avoid a community coordinated update to DID exchange.
Exactly.
So I know the title says this, but that's like not super trivial to change the name of the file here, but it's basically just a transition to out of band invitations.
And to be Sam, to be more accurate, the implementation and being able to handle DID exchange is to be created in step two. And so that when we get out of step two, you will start receiving DID exchange. In theory, you should not receive any DID exchange until step three. So right. To be clear.
Yes. So, okay. Yes. So the first steps don't involve it. Then the next ones do, but the first one, the really important one we need to make is adjusting what's in the QR code. The rest of it's easier from a transition perspective. You can also simultaneously support connections and DID exchange during a transition, which makes that even easier. But you can't simultaneously generate a QR code of both types in the same QR code. So that's why the focus on this right now.
And this is why I'm saying that the PR or the RFC is not great, but basically it's saying, step zero, we agree on the plan. Step one, everyone implements and is able to handle out of band, but continues to use connections. Step two, so at the end of step in step two, you start to receive out of band, but they continue to be connections. And during that period, you implement DID exchange if you haven't already. And then step three is we're fully over to out of band and DID exchange.
Thank you for clarifying. That's helpful. So,
as long as you've got out of band working and can generate an out of band that calls the connections, you are good for this deadline that we're talking here.
All right. James, to answer your question on the AFJ front, I'm not myself too deep into it. I'm more on the present proof work right now, but I think we are at step one. So I think OOB has just been merged, and I know that folks are working hard on DID exchange right now. So yeah, looks good, the deadline.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Excellent. Is anyone opposed to merging this PR with the date update? I'm leaving space here to allow someone to object. It's about to run out.
Out of curiosity, will the older protocols then be deprecated at some point, or what's the...
Yes. Yes, yes, that's the goal.
Yes, that's absolutely the goal.
Once we transition through this, then the connections protocol specifically is the one targeted here, will be deprecated, and DID exchange will be the new standard there.
Yeah. So once we're past step three, you basically, you should never be sending out connections and everyone can remove it from their implementations. You should be sending out, initiating all connections with BitExchange, and therefore we can fade out connections.
And the interesting part is how the SSI agents will communicate that. Will they remove some functionality at some point, or will they make adjustments or mark it as deprecated internally? Exactly. I think that's a very important step.
It is definitely a bit tricky how you do it.
The last phase, the actual removal of the code, is not something that we need to coordinate. So it's mentioned, but is not something that we set necessarily a target date for. What we do though is make it so that so that you can be confident in not receiving any of those connections. Or the, you know, the connections invitations in a QR code anymore, which means that you're safe to remove as soon as your development schedule allows. And so that's the big effort here is to make that happen. I don't know that it's indicated as part of the transition RFC, James, but it doesn't really need to be. We're going to be very happy to change the status on the connections protocol as soon as that actually happens. Okay, I'm about to hit merge. Any last objections? Okay. That is merging. Thank you, Stephen, for that update. I don't see Timo here, but he has submitted an RFC that includes the encoding algorithm for any credential attributes that's required for interoperability. The previous one described this, but the version 2 of the protocol did not. So this adds it. And then also, this is important, updates the AIP2 commit link and change log. So this is, we allow for clarifications in an AIP2, and this appears to fall in the category of a clarification. So the change involves here, this is the change log and commit hash, but it specifically mentions that the encoded values of the credential must follow the encoding algorithms described in this section. And then there's an encoding claim section which contains this. So this is, again, intended as a clarification. This was in the previous version, but for some reason it was pulled out of here. Does anyone have history as to why this was not in the version 2?
I was going to check back on that because I was thinking the same thing. I can't believe it's not there already, but really appreciate this being added because it absolutely has to be here.
It does. Specifically, yeah. For a non-creds based credentials, all the attributes are saved as a number in order to make the math work. And if the values that are not natively numbers are converted to numbers in incompatible ways, then nothing works. And so this has the instructions on specifically how to turn it into a thing so that we can all do it the same way. And so that's how you encode this, and that's there. And so these other changes simply point to this. But this is the meaty block that's been added here. So given that this was created 19 hours ago, given that this is substantial, I think we should probably not merge this today. But should consider it and look to merge it next meeting. The reason I'm pausing there is not just because we're updating an RFC, which is fine, but because this does update AIP2, and we want to make sure that if there's any implications or anything else, that we have very sufficient time to review this because of the clarification update to AIP2. Any thoughts about this or the process that I'm proposing? The 9th is the 9th. Any thoughts?
I definitely like that. I would like to add another topic if we could on encoding.
In the meeting today?
Yeah, if we have 2 seconds.
Do you want to do it right now?
Yeah.
I think we have time. Let's do it. Do you need the screen?
Just go to that encoding section of that change.
Here?
That part right there.
I'm going to make it pretty. Whoa.
So what would people think if we added one more encoding rule, which is a regex on a ISO 602, is it, date format, that when that regex succeeded, we converted it into an integer instead of a string. So it would appear to be a string. So anytime we get a string, we would look to see if it is an ISO 602 date. And if it was, we converted it to an integer instead of a string or instead of a hash.
Do you mean ISO 8601?
Yeah, 8601. There you go. Sorry, the ISO date
right. format. So you're proposing that the second bullet here from the top is, hey, if it's an ISO 8601.
Exactly.
Either in a native data type or represented in a string matched by provided regex, then you encode it.
It's going to be a string, right? It's going to be a string no matter what.
Oh, the claim? Yes.
Like if you put an ISO 8601 date into a JSON structure, it's going to be a string.
Yes. Right? It depends exactly what you mean by JSON structure, but yes.
Yes.
For example, in Python, you don't really create JSON structures. You just create structures and then you make them JSON. Exactly. So the distinction is a little bit different in depending on the language that you're working with.
Yeah. So we basically add a third bullet point in between the first two that said, check to see if this is a date based on the structure. So you're actually sniffing the data to see if it's a date. And if it is, you convert it to an integer in some well-defined way. And then otherwise you fall through to the next one, which is convert it to a string, encode in UTF-8 bytes, supply SHA-256 to digest.
Can I ask Stephen what the benefit here of having the encoded value?
It's because you can then do predicates on dates. So you could put into the, sorry, and that, yeah, this it wouldn't stop here. You would also have to let the proof know, the proof request know that, oh, I'm gonna put a date. I'm gonna put the date as an integer in here, even though it's a string in the claim. So basically what that allows is the presentation is a string and it looks like a date and it looks the format that everyone expects, but we can do predicate math on it, predicate ZKPs on it, which is, and dates is really, really, really where we want to do predicates.
Mike.
So we've been doing some work with strings and dates and things like that lately. And one concern I have is if you have to do something that's a little more accurate than a date, if you have to do a timestamp. So if you have to say 2 p.m. on November 3rd, 2027, the 2 p.m., 2:37 p.m. Makes it so that the 32-bit integer won't fit, you know, the 32-bit integers will fit a date, but they won't fit a full timestamp. So if we're not careful, we're in danger of having date strings and date integers and needing, if you're going to do predicate math on a timestamp, then you'd have date Unix timestamps as well, something like that. So I'm just curious if anyone has thoughts on whether we want to go to integers or Unix timestamps, or, you know, if we need to do something different for each of those different scenarios, what do other people think?
Paul, your hand's up next. We'll circle back around, Mike.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what's not working today, because we put in the dates and the attributes as pure numbers and already do predicates on them.
We are, and that may be enough, but there's when you go into a community where they're not verifiable credential and on-creds experts, they immediately want to put any date as ISO 8601, if that's the right number, format. And so when you have to sit and explain to them, well, we're just going to put an integer in that represents, you know, 2022-02-09 as an integer, it confuses things. So it's a clarification. I think it's a good one. I think, you know, I think it was Matt that came up with that from Kiva, and it was like, oh, epiphany that's it's so simple to do it that way. So we could keep doing that. It's just I'm thinking that if we could have a way that people could have dates and have them automatically encoded, that would be nice.
I agree completely that having it automatically encoded and swapping back and forth between ISO 8601 and an integer or numeric date format is a really good idea. I was just curious if we wanted to pick integers as dates, or if we want to do support timestamps, then you might want to do Unix and then hope that the world fixes Unix timestamps in the next 16 years before we run out of time on them. So just curious on that thought.
I think that totally depends on your own age and whether you'll be working in this field in 2038 or not.
I'm older than some of the crew, but I'm not going to be retired by then. So I'm leaving myself a landmine if I choose Unix.
I think you meant job security, Mike.
There you go. Job security.
I'm kidding.
One of the benefits with the ISO 8601 is that can have a timestamp as part of it. It doesn't have to just be the month, day, and year. And then that doesn't have the issue with the Unix issues with 2038.
Yeah. What we're talking about though, James, is that if you're going to do predicate proofs, it's going to have to be numeric. And so what do you convert that ISO 8601 to so that it ends up as numeric?
That's getting to Stephen's thought, is so if we encode that differently based off of a regex, then we would in theory be able to do a predicate comparison then.
Oh, I see. So you're thinking we can do a different one depending. So you want to add two bullet points. one that would, whether it's a date, and one whether it's a date time.
Does it need to be, do we need two?
So James, the integer format doesn't support enough significant figures of information to support the timestamp. And so if you apply a regex to convert an ISO string into an integer format, you have to convert it to either to a numeric format. You'd have to convert it to an integer, which wouldn't support a timestamp. Or if you needed a timestamp, then you'd have to convert it to Unix. And so the question is whether we want to convert only to Unix or only to integer and ignore timestamps, or put in code that says, well, if it's clearly just a date, we'll go to integer, and if it's a timestamp, then we'll use Unix. Or I could have it all wrong.
No, you have it right. So what Steven's proposing is that this is already defined here in 441 for a best practices, but this doesn't handle timestamps, just dates. And so,
but it also forces you to put into the claim a weird way of putting a date in. And that's more what I'm, versus putting, you know, just taking the date in ISO format that you're likely to have in legacy systems and shove it into the claim and have the encoding decoding system figure it out for you. So it is slightly different. I mean, we can live with this, and But it, you know, when you're looking at encoding dates is probably the most important ZKP thing. And here's where it's absolutely crucial. If you want to support ZKPs, the W3C VC model says that you need an ISO 8601 issue date must be populated. Well, basically that's a unique identifier for any credential. Anyone can pretty well use that. However, if in presentations, you can do a ZKP and just say issue date, you know, today is later than the issue date and before the expiry date, then you don't have this unique identifier exposed. So you can still do 8601. You can still meet the requirements of having an issue and expiry date, but you don't have to expose those unique identifiers to verifiers. And so it's not only, you know, those are the two really, really crucial ones. Troy?
Yeah, I was just gonna, because I was watching the VC data model maintenance group. They moved actually to the XSD definition for date, just FYI. I'll post the pull request in. I think the second thing is, I wasn't following the whole discussion because it came late, but I would just encourage wherever possible to match their decisions because that just makes it easier for everybody, I think. And then I think the third one is, I think I've heard this issuance date thing before, but I actually think, and from, you know, commentary that you see about it, it's actually better understood as not valid before, like in JWT. So I wouldn't think about it as issuance date, but rather not valid before, right? And that can actually have a pretty significant difference.
The privacy problem is there, yeah.
Well, and no, because you can say not valid before is like, you know, whatever you want, right? So, I hear that argument, but like,
more so.
You know, just because it's there, if you don't put not valid before, that's the same thing as saying not valid before January 1, like 1900, right? It's the exact same thing.
Yeah, but then you're doing really stupid things. Like, if we have a way to prove that in zero knowledge, that's a way better solution.
I'm just saying that, like, if you don't care about not valid before, you could put 1900 if you want. It's the same. It's like saying zero, right?
So there's a couple things. Yes, it could allow that, but in, number one, the community needs to firmly agree that that's the semantic meaning of issue date, and furthermore ought to be encouraged to do a little bit of fibbing there to not create a unique identifier. You know, round it to whatever it needs to make sense so that you don't end up with unique ones per credential or even a small batch of credentials.
I hear it. I know I'm distracting the discussion. I just hear that one from time to time and I'm just like,
but it's still super valid, right?
If it's always valid, just put not valid before like 1900, because it's not fibbing. It's when you receive this thing, it's always valid no matter what the date is. I don't consider it fibbing actually.
Well, me neither, except that we have to make sure that the community all agrees on the semantic meaning of issue date.
So why is it a required field? Anyway, Paul, you're up with a hand.
Yeah, two points. The first on how we encode that. I think in general, it would make sense if the encoding is maybe linked to the schema. So the schema author can say that this attribute is then encoded as a timestamp or as a date. I know that this functionality does not exist, but I think it would help and it would be theoretically maybe the best solution.
Absolutely. And
that's a great long-term solution.
And point two, what came up in German projects very often is that we're kind of missing standardized attribute names in AnonCrats, just as like issuance date, because the valid until attribute field would make totally sense if this is like formalized and has like a standardized attribute name so that every verifier knows to check this one, because otherwise schema authors might use different names and that gets pretty cumbersome. like issuance date in the VC, W3C data model, I think it would make sense to have something similar for the AnCred schemes.
Yep, 100%.
So the schema is a great long-term solution, but that's not something we can do in the short term. And so this is this section of encoding claims is how we handle it until the schema stuff is fixed. That's the discussion here.
Yep.
So I think everyone agrees that having a standard for dates would be useful. So Stephen, what you originally proposed was we had a bullet point saying, if it's a date, encode it like this with very specific instructions. So it seems like what we're arguing about now is which specific instructions should be followed.
Yeah.
I don't think, is anyone in opposition to declaring this the standard encoding for a date here or date time?
I got to say, Troy's argument that the world is shifting to XSD does create an issue. I got to study that to find out.
Can someone give us the TLDR on what XSD is? I can't be the only one who doesn't know that off the top of my head.
It's basically kind of the way you format. I found a thing on it, but basically you do a format in YYY-MM-DD for dates, and times are with colons, and you put a plus in between. So it looks like it is amenable to regex handling. I'm sure it would be. I would hope it would be.
And so as an alternative to 8601 is what you're saying?
Yeah. They're very similar, right? It's just like I think there's like slight differences in the restrictions on the format. I don't have all the details. There was a whole like issue argument about the RFC versus ISO versus XSD in the VC working group. I can post that issue actually in the chat too, so you can see the background of why they're doing that.
I'm presuming that XSD is better than 8601 in some way.
Yeah, and like you said, I'll post the issue because people who know about it, we're talking about it.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, the concept, that's a detail in what I want to do, but what I want to do is get to, first of all, I've sort of got this longer term scheme. First is just dates, because they're so valuable to be able to prove in zero knowledge. Issue, having an accurate issue date, having an accurate expiry date, and yet not turning those over to verifiers, I think is a pretty crucial issue. It leads to fingerprinting if you don't do it, and provides easy way to do correlatability. So I think it's a good practice. To Paul's point, I think to me, I think OCA is a good path to that. Overlays data capture, or ODCA, is a good path to that. And so I'd like that. And then once you have that, then this idea of having, here are the magic values that we want to put in, ISS for issue, EXP for expiry, and various other things, would be another great path to go. So I'm trying to take this in increments that we can move forward on in a reasonable way. I think this is a decent first step. I would love to get a group together here. And if I can find any volunteers on overlay data capture, I would love to see that, because I think it's got huge potential in how it allows the issuer to explain all sorts of things about the data they're issuing in very simple ways. There's my rant. Sorry,
James.
So one of my questions here is that the PR that Timo's put together to add the encoding claims, this is what we were already previously doing. And I think this was the, should have been in here. And so this is a clarification. The addition of another bullet point, how would we go about doing that, since we've already declared what the, that would be an addition versus a clarification. Right.
Absolutely. So my suggestion would be, this would be merged as is. I definitely don't want to stand in the way of merging. I was piggybacking on the issue. That's all. This would definitely be a separate merge, and we would talk about it in terms of how to transition to it or how it can be used.
Awesome.
100%.
Okay. So I think, yeah, we have... I think the next step might be to propose a thing, and then we can argue very specifically about the merits of the encoding integer encoding of the date time. But yeah, I think that's fantastic. And again, you're right. We can propose that as a separate PR without inhibiting this one. Okay. Any other, this is awesome discussion. Any other opinions on the topic? Okay. This next one that we're looking at, by the way, I'm still going to leave this one open for review on this particular one, and I'm assuming that a new PR is going to show up addressing the remaining pieces. But I anticipate, unless we have an objection, merging this next week after we've had a chance to review and anyone raise an objection. Okay, next one up here is pull 711. This updates Aries RFC to indicate that HTTPS is preferred. This came up in discussion of the, and this is the DIDCOM transports. This came up in discussion in the Aries Mobile Summit. The reality is that mobile vendors are, for mostly good reasons, are getting angry at mobile apps that don't use HTTPS for everything, and requiring exceptions and other sorts of things to make that happen. This is a little more complicated because in this case, a mobile app might be talking to an endpoint owned entirely by somebody else. And so it's a little more complicated in our community. And so what we are recommending is that HTTPS be used in order to for endpoints where mobile, you know, where you expect to be able to talk to a mobile device, which is a lot of them, but there are potentially some where it's unlikely in an enterprise scenario or some other thing. And so this is the salient point here that helps avoid those issues with mobile. There's a longer discussion about all of this. The short answer is that this is not a battle we're going to win. If we have to go convince Apple and Android that DIDCOM is different because X. And so this was a discussion that we had in the Aries Mobile Summit that has now materialized as a PR to be able to update that information. And props to Jason for making this PR. Any questions, thoughts, opinions? I got a thumbs up from Mike Ebert. Any other thoughts? Thumbs up from Steven. And James. Well, the Curranses and the Ebertses all think this is a good idea. Is anyone think this is a bad idea? We need to know now to make this change. Anyone oppose? Anna McCowan, awesome. That sounds good then. This is marked as a draft. Am I okay making this a?
I can talk to James to Jason to get it changed.
Okay, go ahead and update that.
I think it's draft because of the checks failing. We need to. Did I?
You missed the part where I pleaded for help on fixing that.
Okay.
Yes. Specifically, if anyone was late, I also Stephen, by the way, mentioned that if someone just delighted in creating quarterly reports, having a volunteer that handled that for our community would be a wonderful thing as well, since we're consistently missing deadlines on that.
No, not. Excuse me.
You didn't miss it?
No.
Oh, I got a note from Nate that said Nathan said we missed it.
On February 3rd, the date it was due and it was in.
Oh, well, you're awesome. Anyway, I didn't mean to disparage your fine efforts.
Yes, I was quite offended when he sent me the same note and I said, I'm on it. It's half done and it's due today. They sent me an email, said it's due on February 3rd.
Anyway, I did offer that if someone wanted to get involved in that manner, that was open. So I didn't check with you before I said that, but I don't know that you'd be upset about having someone else.
By the way, as long as nobody's offended by what I'm writing, and I'm happy to do them. So
okay, Well, then please direct your efforts to helping us fix the CI/CD issues with the Ares RFC repo then. Getting the build onto the index would also be fantastic, is the other thing that I mentioned there. So, okay, if you could follow up with Jason then, that would be fantastic. Okay, I'll add that and then we can go ahead and handle it next time. And with that, I think we're at the end of our agenda with a whopping 3 minutes to spare. Does anyone have anything more urgent than all of us having a 3 minute break before our next meeting?
Probably nothing that fits in 3 minutes, so I'll keep it for next time.
Well, what is the topic? I can throw it on the agenda for next time.
Okay, I think in general, what I already said, is there any concept for standardized attribute names for AnandCred schemes and how to use them similar to the VC model or how that can be integrated? Also, what we thought, like next to the like valid until date, we think it might be helpful to have a standardized attribute name for a link that's linking to terms and conditions. So usually if you issue a credential, you have some terms and conditions and they might change. And it's kind of more complicated in a decentralized ecosystem. So the best approach that we have could be you're having a standardized attribute name and the wallet could check regularly if there is a change in that link in the data, and so could present that decision to the user and he has to accept updated terms and conditions.
Love the concept. I've got that. Is that something that you'd be willing to organize a discussion about for next week?
I first wanted to ask if there's anything existing in this direction. So that's why I thought I ask first and present the rough idea before putting in any work.
Does anyone know of anything that's existing? I've thought about this, but I don't know of any documented work. Paul, I think that means that we're ready to hear your suggestions.
Okay.
I can have you on the agenda for next week. And that sounds like a really relevant discussion for a variety of things. I added machine readable governance here because we have talked about the usefulness of putting a link to the machine readable governance under which a credential is expected to operate in a credential as something like a link. And so that has come up in conversation. We haven't done anything about it. And that would be a really useful discussion to have.
Yeah, and so the second topic that's on my head is a decorator for redirects after, for example, verification proofs.
I think we have something like that, but maybe I'm confusing.
But we figured out, I think probably we didn't see any mechanisms where the redirect link is actually secured in some way. I think it would make sense that the redirect link is kind of secured because if you find a QR code with an invitation somewhere and the QR code is not secured in itself, usually the invitation. So if the redirect link is in the invitation, anyone can change the link and do a phishing attack. So there's kind of a need to secure the redirect.
I remember some discussion about that, and it was actually in a secured message rather than an invitation. So there's something there. So we can dig into that and figure out what's there. But if you will lead the discussion next week, and again, you don't have to have all the answers, but asking the right questions is helpful. Then we'll discuss this next week.
Cool.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks, everyone, for coming. And I hope your week is a fantastic one.
Thanks, folks.